We are experts at talking about mental health, relationships, self-regulation, post-secondary planning, a lot of things as high school counselors. But when it comes to money, how versed are we and how comfortable do we feel talking about it? This is something that my husband and I talk about a lot for our family and our marriage, whether that's paying off debt, we're debt-free, we're proud of that, saving and investing, planning for our future, or setting financial goals. I promise this conversation is something worth talking about. In this episode, I brought on a guest named Jeremy Schneider to talk about finances as it pertains to us as high school counselors. So not necessarily how we're teaching students about finances or planning for their futures, but spending, saving, and investing for our own selves. Jeremy Schneider is a successful entrepreneur and personal finance expert. After starting an internet company in college and selling it at the age of 34 for over $5 million and retiring at 36, Jeremy has dedicated his life to teaching personal finance. He founded Personal Finance Club, a community of champions of the individual investor who help further financial education. Jeremy likes playing beach volleyball and writing bios about himself in the third person. If you couldn't tell from his bio, Jeremy is a fun guy to talk with. He gives some awesome practical tips and he dispels some common myths around finances too, which I really appreciated. So let's get into this conversation where I know you're going to take away some really great and valuable nuggets of wisdom. You got into this profession to make a difference in your students' lives, but you're spread thin by all of the things that keep getting added to your to-do list. I can't create more hours in the day, but I can invite you into my counselor click where you'll finally catch your breath. Come with me as we unpack creative ideas and effective strategies that'll help you be the counselor who leaves a lifelong impact on your students. I'm Lauren Tingle, your high school counseling hype girl, here to help you energize your school counseling program and remind you of how much you love your job. Hi, Jeremy. I'm so excited to have you on High School Counseling Conversations. We've never had a conversation on this podcast before about finances, budgeting, financial health. And so I thought I would bring in an expert to chat with high school counselors about this topic.
Hi, Lauren. Thank you. I would love to talk about money. It's what I like to do for some reason.
Yeah. So I found you on Instagram. My husband is more of a money and finance nerd than I am, but I still find it very valuable. And it's something that we have conversations in our home around a lot. And when I told him Jeremy Schneider is coming on my podcast, he was like, that is so cool. Like, I already followed him on Instagram. And I was like, yeah, I asked him if he had any questions for you, but he hasn't gotten back to me. So we're going to go with the questions that I've prepared for you. He's not a high school counselor, so he doesn't get priority in that anyway. So let's dive in. I have already given the listeners kind of your bio and your background. So let's just dive into, I'm going to call it financial health. I don't know if there's a better phrasing for that, but like, why is financial health important for people, especially educators, to be thinking about? Why is this something that we shouldn't just, you know, hope it disappears or something? We need to be thinking about it, right?
Yeah. Money is weird because we go through school, you know, went through 12 years of school, college, maybe even some post-college degrees, all with the purpose of, you know, education has many purposes, but I think one arching purpose is to make a living. And then we never really talk about the measure of that living, which is dollars. You know, strangely, it's not, and I'm painting with a broad brush here because I know there's amazing educators out there who do integrate it into their lessons, but there's very few like government mandated money courses, and that bubbles up to adults. You know, so then we have adults who have spent their lives learning to make a living, but then don't know what to do with money. And yet it's so important. I think when you look at the data about people's concerns and why marriages fail and stress and all that stuff, like money is always at the root of these problems, yet we don't ever, you know, don't ever learn about it. And so it's crazy people like me out there who are like shouting from the rooftops, like, hey, let's like take this more seriously because it's important. You know, first of all, if you're like in poverty, money is like the necessary thing you need to pull yourself out. But even if you're middle class, it can be this huge source of stress that can be the difference between building wealth and living a fruitful life and being broke and stressed your whole life. So I think taking some focus to like do it right and do some simple things can just make your life a lot better.
Yeah. And not even just the learning about money, but talking about it, it can feel so taboo, especially, you know, in how much money you make and how you're living, whether you're living above or below your means, or what your goals are for finances. Like, I feel like the more we talk about it, the less taboo it's going to be. And it should be. Like, we talk about everything else, or we talk about being vulnerable or transparent with so many other things in life, but money is one of those things that like still gets a little weird sometimes for people.
Totally. Even, you know, even me, like I post my bank account online. My kind of bio says transparent millionaire, because I think that everyone, like, you don't know what your neighbor makes, you don't know what your family makes. And then this idea of the millionaires, what do they do? It's like this like secret offshore Swiss tax loophole thing. And I'm like, no, it's not, at least not for me. Like, and so like, this is what I do. And you're right. It's like such a taboo. Like, no, you can't ask them what you make. You can't ask them about their debt. And I think that's bad, you know, for various reasons why, how we got in this place, I think it's bad. But you're right, in this age of transparency and vulnerability, money seems to have not been included in that for some reason, because even I, when I am out at a conference or a party and people know what I do and I ask them a question about money, they're like, it's like...
And they're like, I don't want to talk to the money guy about money because like, right, he has thoughts about it. You're like, no, let's talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've seen you talk about building wealth by living below your means. Will you offer some encouragement to counselors who feel like they're already maybe like at their means? Like, how do they live below that? Or maybe some inspiration for some of those who either feel like they could work with some of that margin? Like, what does it mean to live below your means in order to build wealth and kind of change your future?
Yeah, the cold reality of the math is if you spend all of your money, then you're broke, no matter how much you make. And if you make $500,000 a year and you spend all your money, then you're broke. But if you make $60,000 a year and you spend $40,000 a year, then that $20,000 a year you don't spend easily makes you a multimillionaire over the course of an investing career. And if you make very little money, it's tougher for sure. You know, that said, more money doesn't instantly solve the problem. You know, there's countless examples of people who are making well into the six figures who still live paycheck to paycheck. And so I think there's this misconception that because my income is medium or low, I can't do it. Or if I made more money, then that would solve my problems. And that's just not true. And the reality is you have to live below your means. And so someone making, you know, I often post someone making $60,000 a year, for example, and living below their means, and comments are like, there's no way you could save 15% making $60,000 a year. I was like, well, some people make $50,000 a year. That's way less than 15%, you know,
right?
What do they do? And so, you know, the point isn't to, you know, wag my finger and shame people being like, oh, you're spending too much. But it's just to point out, hey, that's the reality of the math. If you spend every dollar you make, and if you get a $10,000 raise, you'll have $10,000 of extra money. That's probably not true, because your lifestyle naturally inflates to your level of income. And so in order to build wealth, you kind of have to go the opposite way and say, hey, I'm going to pay myself first. I'm going to take some off the top and put it into saving, put it into investing, force myself to live below my means, and then with what's left, live more simply. And then you'll be off to building wealth. And it's, you know, it's much more, I believe it's much more freeing to be living on $50,000 a year making 60 than to be living on 60 making 60. Because if you're living on 50, you're building wealth, you're saving, your future's secure, you have a buffer. If you're spending 60 and making 60, your paycheck to paycheck every week is a stress, any like a job loss or an illness or an unexpected event or taxes or kids or whatever could throw a wrench in the system. And that's a terrifying place to be. And so while it's not fun to spend less money in the short term, I think it actually pretty quickly makes you feel better.
Yeah, that's such an encouragement to dispel that myth. Like, if I only made more money, I'd be able to live below my means. But like you said, I mean, you could give an example of every single amount of money that somebody might make in their job. And there are people who are living below that. And what a comforting thing, because all of those things you just listed, kids, health, they all come up like inevitably. And if we don't have that buffer or that margin, we're going to be living in a really stressful situation all the time, like that fight or flight mode all the time with our money, when I don't think we're like intended to live that way with our money. But that's an encouragement, because I think people, especially counselors working in the education system, you see how much money you're going to make each year for the rest of your life. Like, we don't get a random $10,000 bonus. We don't get this, but it kind of makes it nice because it's predictable. So you could really map out your financial future knowing, you know, if I stay in this field for forever, this is what I can expect. These are some goals that I could set.
Yeah.
It's encouraging, actually, to hear you say that you can live below your means, and that's a good thing.
And I think, you know, when I hear that every year your income and retirement is mapped out for you, that feels, I don't know, I've lived my life as an entrepreneur, so that feels very limiting to me. But there's an option there, which is money can make more money. And so if you don't just subscribe to, okay, my stipend is X dollars, therefore I'm going to spend X dollars and work until I die, you say, hey, I'm going to take my money by the reins, not spend it all, put some of it to work in investments, then you can build wealth. And actually, teachers are one of the, I should have researched that time, but I'm almost positive you look at one of the professions with the most self-made millionaires.
I think so too. I've read that before.
Okay, good. So, and I think because teachers are smart, responsible, hardworking, and a lot of them have figured out this strategy, which is, hey, don't just take what's being given to me. Like, let's put some of it to work. And you don't have to save that much money, it turns out, if you're investing kind of monthly along the way, because there's this magical effect of compound growth. You know, you're not just saving under your mattress, you're investing, which, you know, over the time turns into a snowball, first slow, but bigger and bigger and bigger, and then takes off. And then that projected income and retirement you talked about suddenly kind of goes out the window and is dwarfed by this snowball of money that you've created. And you can retire early or buy a beach house or, you know, live better than like the rubric has assigned to you.
Is it a goal of yours to get some small groups up and running at your high school? Are small groups the tasks that just keep getting pushed down on your to-do list and never make it to your actual calendar and then out into the world? I want you to check out my curated podcast playlist just for small group counseling. The episodes featured cover topics like overall benefits of small groups, partner buy-in, student buy-in, facilitation tips, and more. Head to counselorclick.com/small group playlist to put this playlist in your Spotify lineup and get inspired to run some small groups this year. That's counselorclick.com/small group playlist. Now, let's get back to the episode. So will you talk a little bit more about how valuable time can be in that? Because if we're listening to this right now and we've really never put any thought into our financial future, what value can time bring to our savings, our investing? Maybe like give us some examples of how you've seen people use time to their advantage in terms of getting ready for retirement or planning for their future.
Yeah, it's just simple math, and it's partially inspiring and partially discouraging, depending on your perspective, I guess. But I'll try to make it all inspiring at the end. But basically, the stock market, if you invest money, and I'm a very rational, conservative investor, I'm not picking stocks, I'm not doing anything speculative or risky. I just buy the companies of the world. So as they profit and grow, the profits and growth come back to me in what's called an index fund. And if you go back in time and look at how the stock market has done historically, it returns about 10% per year on average. Not every year, of course, but on average over time, it returns about 10% per year. And 10% per year turns into exponential growth. If you have $1,000 and you get a 10% return, that's only $100. But if you have $1,000,000 and you get a 10% return, that's $100,000. And so as you're investing monthly and the amount grows and grows and grows, this gets huge. And so, for example, $500 a month for a year is $6,000. 500 times 12 is 6,000. And if you get a 10% return on that, let's say you invest it all at the beginning and just for round numbers, 10% of 6,000 is 600. So you get 6,600. I think we'd all appreciate $6,600 extra in the bank if you're saving $500 a month, but it's not life-changing stuff. But if you continue that for 40 years, you don't end up with 40 times that. You end up with about $3 million. Because of this massive impact of compound growth, it turns out that most of the $3 million isn't what you saved. It's not even the interest on what you saved. It's like the interest on the interest. It's the growth of the growth, which is this magical, magical impact. And so, you know, that's the impact of time, right? When we went from 1 year to 40 year, you know, we skipped kind of like the important 39 years of it, but it, you know, it gets bigger and bigger as time goes on. And so some people might be listening. I talk to people all the time. I'm 42 and I talk to people around my age. They say, I'm 40. Is it too late?
That was going to be my next question.
Okay, good. And my answer is, of course, you know, if you look at how long you expect to live as a 40 year old, you know, it's well into your 80s. You know, the, I think the, you know, the average lifespan in the US is around 78 right now. But if you've hit 40, you've avoided dying in your youth, you know, childhood, babies, teenagers, 20s, 30s. And so now once you're 40, your actual expected lifespan is, you know, into your 80s, which is a 45-year time span. And, you know, trust me, 60-year-old version of you will wish that 40-year-old version of you started, because that was 20 years you could have been investing and have that money like start growing exponentially.
Right. Like 60-year-old you is not going to regret those last 20 years of investing. Whenever you start is a good time to start.
Yeah. The ancient Chinese proverb, I think, says the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, but the second best time is today. And so it's so easy to look backwards and be like, oh man, if I was a really, you know, precocious 12-year-old who was speculating on Bitcoin, I'd be a billionaire. But, you know,
we could all speculate what that would be like, right?
Exactly. But what you can think about is, man, when I'm 60, I'll be really grateful for 40-year-old me putting some money away. And even if you're 60, right? Like if you're 60, your lifespan's probably looking in the 80s. It's still 25 years, right?
Yeah.
And so I, you know, this too late thing, I don't even really sometimes fully get the question, like, what's the alternative? Like just, you know, bury yourself in debt and die broke. Like that doesn't seem like a good option. Like I said, even though partially the point is to live better later, you're also living happier now because you're not feeling as much stress and doom about your future.
Yeah, totally. What kinds of practical habits can a counselor do right now to move the needle with their savings? I mean, if that feels really hard to do, to live below their means or to have some extra money to invest, what are some meaningful things that they could do?
Yeah, I mean, the first place to look is the big stuff, which is housing, transportation. And so if you have a car payment, then I would strongly think about how to get out of that car payment. So for example, I never bought a new car until the age of 35, I think. I owned, you know, I'm not a teacher, so I have a different experience, but I started an internet company and my take home pay was $36,000 a year. I was always the lowest paid employee at my company. I paid everyone more. And I'm not saying some like tricky accounting thing where like I paid myself a dollar and I got a million stock options. Like we were a small company. I had no funding. I just took home what I could from the income we made, and my max take home salary was $36,000. And so I bought, you know, my car, but I was a 99 Ford Explorer I bought in the year 2010. So it was an 11-year-old car. I paid $3,000 cash for it, and I drove it for the next 6 years. And that was like, you know, this great car. And, you know, and with cars, people have tons of excuses like, oh, it needs to be reliable or this or that. And, you know, yeah, every year or so something went wrong with the car and it cost me like $500, but $500 a year is like what, 42 a month or something.
Right. But meanwhile, compared to a big car payment.
The average car payment right now is like $700. It's bananas. Mm-hmm. And so this, like, it's kind of like this false flag argument being like, oh, I can't afford $500 once a year. Therefore I need to pay $700 a month. The math ain't math in
there. It's not mathing. That's what I was gonna say.
Not all. So yeah. So for sure, I would never I never borrow money for a car. If you can't afford in cash, I never lease a car. You buy modest cars in cash. As you build wealth, sure, you can move up in car, but don't, when you're basically borrowing from your future to buy a better car today, then you're mortgaging your future, right? Then you're not going to have the opportunity to grow. And then the other one is housing, right? And you know, these things are easy to say on a podcast, but, and I know it's like hard out there if you're looking for housing. But there's options. You can do roommates or look for rentals or cheaper properties. Or, you know, I think sometimes we spend so much time and effort on little decisions like, ooh, like, you know, looking in the grocery store, like looking for some, say, 50 cents on a different brand. And then we just buy the first house we see, you know? And I'm like, ooh, you could have maybe saved $50,000 if you would have been more judicious about waiting for the right property. So those are the two big ones. And then beyond that, I think my favorite strategy for budgeting is just to, like I said earlier, pay yourself first. Set up automatic investments out of your checking account into savings, into investing. Because I think I could sit here and say, you got to budget every dollar. But I know in reality here on planet Earth, 95% of us are never going to have a detailed budget. It's a favorite trope of finance experts to like wag your finger and say you should be budgeting. But the reality is most people aren't. And so you can kind of
like automate some of those processes so you don't even have to be a disciplined person to be able to do it.
Exactly. Because I think what most of us do is we kind of look in our bank account and see how much is there and see how we're doing and if we can spend a little more, spend a little less. And so if you basically automate that money into investing and savings, you can still just do that. And then whatever is left, you can do it. But then at least you have a, you know, you're paying yourself first. You have this plan in place to be building wealth over time. And automating is the best way to do it because then it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, happens automatically. And then it starts that magic of compound growth.
Yeah, I think that's so smart to go with the big things first, because we often think like, if I just don't go to Starbucks, you know, for my Friday treat every Friday, I'm going to save this much of the course of the year. But when you look at the big things that take up a big portion of our income and the things that we're making huge decisions about that last for years, I mean, those decisions on buying a house and a car, we're going to live with those decisions for a while. That feels like, I mean, a discipline in itself to look between those two. Like you might feel like, oh, I'm going to pat myself on the back because I'm not spending as much on my coffee, or I'm going to shop at Aldi instead of Publix or something. But those are tiny little things, but there are big things that make an impact too.
Agreed. And the tiny things do add up, but I think a lot of times we're penny wise and pound foolish, right? You save the $5 on your grocery trip or on your coffee, and then you've got a $700 a month car payment. I'm like, okay, that's, if you get your cost of car ownership down to $200, that's $500 a month that you just opened up there. And at $200 a month cost of car ownership, if you buy it in cash and make repairs as you need, is still a pretty nice car, and it gets you from A to B. And you know, there's probably some people listening who are like, nope, I need my brand new car. I'm like, that's fine. That's your choice. But you know, that's the problem, right? That's what's keeping you from building wealth.
Right. And hopefully they're listening because they want to be encouraged, and maybe they're willing to change some habits or hear from an expert and say, okay, this is one thing I can do different. I know we talked about a couple different things in terms of money, like budgeting, investing, saving. Is there one thing right now that you would tell a high school counselor, do this to change your trajectory for a better financial future? Like, I don't know, does one of those outweigh any of the other ones? Or is there anything we didn't talk about that you're like, no, this is a key that like I want you to walk away with and remember from hearing about money and how it could change your future?
So in the world of finance, there's so much noise out there. It's like day trading and insurance and tax loopholes. And it's like, and you like, at least on social media, you see these like hacks and these, and all this noise, and it's really dizzying.
It's overwhelming.
Overwhelming. And the important takeaway that I want to instill in people is like, all that is nonsense. The way to build wealth is to do exactly two things. I call them my two rules of building wealth. Rule number one is to live below your means. And rule number two is invest early and often. And so we're kind of more talking about living below your means. But if you, again, spend all your money you make, you're broke. So you have to live below your means. But then with what you don't spend, you automate those investments over time, then you're rich. And I think all the time I get people who are asking me like, oh, should I be claiming my buying a $7,000 car so I can claim it as a tax? I'm like, no, that's not how rich people get rich. But you know, that's not just in money. People want the diet pill. People want, you know, people always want this like amazing hack. But the reality is rich people get there by living below their means. And you know, I am painting with a broad brush again. There are some people who are fantastically lucky and things like that. But you spend less than you make, you invest and chip away at it over time. And it's just kind of like the diet and exercise of fitness. It's like, if you eat healthy and work out every day, over time, you're going to be in great shape. If you spend less than you make and invest over time, you're going to be very wealthy. And if you keep getting distracted by all these hacks and loopholes and all that stuff that you're hoping that work, you know, it's like, you know, chasing different fad diets or something. It's not going to work over time.
Exactly. That was great encouragement and a great like last little thing to boil down and send people away with. So Jeremy, what kind of resources do you offer if listeners want to connect with you or keep learning about personal finances with you?
I think what I talk about most, because it's what I get asked about the most, is when people are listening to this and they say, this snowball this dude was talking about, this 10%, this millions of dollars, like how? Like what do you mean invest? How? And so that's basically what I mostly educate on. And I'm not, and again, it's no day trading nonsense. It's just simply explaining the basics of how the investment world works. And so on my website at personalfinanceclub.com, there's a big button right on the homepage that says start here, that basically walks you through what's a stock, what's a bond, how to open an account, how to put the money in, what index fund to choose, you know, the best practices. And it basically walks you through the more logistical, strategic side of this higher level conversation we just had. And so, yeah, if you want to find me at Personal Finance Club, I also do daily Instagram posts with little financial best practice fun facts. And we have over 500,000 followers over there. So it's pretty fun. Hopefully we try to make it fun and not too defeating or anything like that.
Right. Encouraging and not dry. It's very practical and they'll walk away with some tips on how they can do it. But I love that you have that set up on your website. So if this sounded intriguing to them or they wanted to take some next steps, you're going to walk them through exactly how on your website. So we'll link that in the show notes. Thank you so much for taking some time to share about personal finances. I know that this is going to be really helpful for my high school counseling listeners.
Thank you very much, Lauren. It was an honor. Thanks for having me.
You can find Jeremy on all of the platforms at Personal Finance Club. He's got a really engaged audience because he gives tons of useful information over on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, his website. He's everywhere. I'll link all of those links for you in the show notes so you can quickly pop over and see what he's all about. If you would like to continue this conversation more, I'd love to hear what you thought about this episode. Send me a DM and let me know something that encouraged you or something new that you plan to take action on after listening to Jeremy. I wish you luck in your personal finance journey. Thanks for listening to today's episode of High School Counseling Conversations. All the links I talked about today can be found in the show notes and also at counselorclick.com/podcast. Be sure to hit follow wherever you listen to your podcast so that you never miss a new episode. Connect with me over on Instagram. Feel free to send me a DM at counselorclick. That's CLIQUE. I'll see you next week.